next time.
It's a ball of fame, make it to the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And if I don't, at least I tried. I was born with pride. Never wanted no handout, I stand out. Patience needed in this game, I never ran out. Cause all I ever wanted was a victory. Running circles around competition like it was 6 to 9. I gave everything on the court. Yeah. And when it's all over, let them say I was a true sport.
Hello?
Tried, I was born with pride. Never wanted no handout, I stand out. Paces.
It's Chaz time.
It's a ball of fame, make it to the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And if I don't, at least I tried. I was born with pride. Never wanted no handout, I stand out. Paces needed in this game, I never ran out. All I ever wanted was a victory. Running circles around competition like it was 6 to 9. I gave everything on the court. Yeah. And when it's all over, let them say I was a true sport.
Hi, everyone. This is True Sports Talk Radio. I am your host, Chastity Melvin. Thanks for tuning in. And it's live. We're going to talk about WNBA playoffs and the end of the season. Minnesota Lynx capped off their fourth title in 70 years, capturing the WNBA 2017 championship title again. I have a great interview with Sue Favors, but first we're going to chalk it up with athletes and sports. True Sports Talk Radio will inform you, entertain you, and who says athletes and sports don't mix? I have Professor Kuntz on the show with me right now to discuss the latest in the news with Colin Kaepernick's protest of kneeling, NFL players wanting to kneel, but now NFL saying they may not be able to play. So let's welcome in Professor Kuntz, who's working on a PhD at the University of Maryland. Professor Kuntz, are you on?
I'm here. What's up, Chaz? Happy Monday.
Oh, happy Monday. Yes, it is. It's Monday. It's another grind week, and we should be excited because we get to work. I get to work. You get to work on your PhD again this week, and so we should be very fortunate and excited about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So let's get right into it. I'm talking athletes and politics. We'll talk a little bit later. I have a guest interview with Sue Favors, and she covers college basketball. Been doing a great job since 2008. We talked a little bit about that later on. But the first segment, I want to get into athletes and sports. Jerry Jones indicated after yesterday's loss, and pretty sure he was upset with that loss. But anyways, he says that from his team, any players who participated in kneeling would not be allowed to play. So, Professor Kuntz, what are your thoughts on that? And the NFL, it's been hearsay and rumors that some of the NFL owners are getting together and trying to start maybe banning some of the players from playing if they decide to kneel. What are your thoughts?
Well, two things come to mind. First, obviously the kneeling is working because the NFL owners are filling it in their pocketbooks. The only reason that we see Jerry Jones speaking out is because financially they are losing money. We're not sure where, we're not sure if it's endorsements, we're not sure if it's TV ratings, but for him to speak out, it has to do with that pocketbook. So to me, that is a good sign that the kneeling has become such a distraction that it is starting to put some pressure on the NFL. Unfortunately, though, the pressure, I'm not sure if the pressure is more so on the owners than the players, and who's going to give in to the pressure. And I feel like the players are probably going to be the ones that give in. I don't foresee players continuing to take a knee. Maybe a few, but it will only be a few.
And for the listeners and everyone tuning in, obviously some people are banning watching the NFL during the regular season. And as Professor Kuntz says, we don't know where it's hitting their pocketbooks. But for the NFL owners to be this adamant about players not kneeling, obviously it always goes back to one thing, and that's money. And we also know that NFL is a $1 billion sports industry. That if for many people that don't know this, Professor Kuntz, the NFL started out as a nonprofit. So they just,
right.
I think over 3 years ago, went from being a nonprofit to for-profit. So that is very interesting within itself. But that's another story for another topic. But we also had Vice President Mike Pence, and everyone said it was a PR stunt, but he left the Colts game because he said players were disrespecting the flag. Why is there such a misconception? And we want our followers, our listeners to listen in to know, what was the main cause for Colin Kaepernick and his decision to kneel, and why? Can you please tell our listeners and those tuning in why? What does kneeling during the national anthem represent? Why did they start doing it, and what are they protesting?
I mean, Chelsea, the main thing was Colin Kaepernick, just like most of us, was being inundated with these videos of these police shootings of unarmed black men, primarily black men, and some women. And he just got frustrated with it, like all of us have been frustrated when we're seeing young men that could be our brothers, our cousins, our fathers, our uncles, and we're seeing them unarmed be gunned down. I mean, and some of the videos have been really atrocious, particularly when you think of Philando Castile, or you think about young 12-year-old Tamir Rice being gunned down in a park. And it's just really, it's really moving. It's really disturbing. And so for Colin Kaepernick, he was unable to continue to stand and salute the flag, because the flag for so many people means different things. So that is how, and it wasn't just Colin Kaepernick, it was also the safety of, on the San Francisco 49ers, Eric Reed, who's still with the 49ers, but they, and I think there was maybe one other player, they decided to take a knee as a way for them to show that, you know, that they were one with the community, that they were not these closed-off millionaire athletes who didn't care about what was going on in communities that many of them were raised in and grew up in or had family in. So that is really why. Oh, I'm sorry. You go ahead.
No, and so to make the point and let everyone know, just basically to shine a light on police brutality and racial injustice, and that is the key. And overall, with the political standpoint from Vice President Mike Pence and Donald Trump, they're trying to play this part where they're not, they're trying to get people away from the main reason behind why the players are kneeling. And just recently, we had last week, we talked about the first baseball player that participated in the protest. And now we have Tampa Bay Lightning's hockey player, JT Brown, who raised the fist during the national anthem. What are your thoughts on just spreading the protest, spreading? I mean, WNBA players have also been very adamant in their protest. The NBA players, obviously, will look forward to seeing once the NBA season starts with what those players will do. But just across the board in professional sports, what kind of impact do you think these athletes will have on this protest and this social awareness?
I mean, Chas, I think we're already seeing the impact just with how the NFL owners are scrambling to come up with different kinds of ways to make it, you know, illegal, quote unquote, to take a knee. And I think what we're seeing with the hockey player and with the baseball player, and obviously the WNBA, the LA Sparks team, and what we can expect to see with the NBA. I think you're just seeing, like, basically, Chastity, we're living in a moment where you're going to be called on the carpet, whether you can't just take a back seat anymore. I mean, with social media, with 24/7 news, 24/7 sports news, I mean, these athletes are growing up in a world where, and it's even different from the world we grew up in. I mean, if we wanted to know what was going on in the world when we were in college, we had to watch the evening news. You know, if you read Sports Illustrated, you didn't get any kind of world government politics in the Sports Illustrated. But now we're seeing the mixing of politics and sports. And I don't think that we're going to go back to that era where sports were just pure sports and politics was just pure politics. So I think you're seeing the beginning of a new wave where athletes are going to have to decide, like, as much as I love my sport, I represent a community. Right, because that's what we always hear. You know, we hear these great stories. I was listening to a story about Deshaun Watson and how he represents I think it's Gainesville, Georgia, a very small. It reminded me of where we grew up, Chas. And, you know, everyone's saying, like, he's the cream of the crop of that community. Well, what if something happened in Gainesville? What is he supposed to do? Right? Like, if he is the one that represents that community, then what is he supposed to do when something happens within that community? And so this is the question that athletes are grappling with. How can I continue to be in my penthouse, you know, with my personal chef and my personal trainer and my personal marketing director and my personal business partner who is purchasing stocks and investing in companies for me, and yet at the same time, I'm telling my fans that I represent the south side of this city or the east side of this city and not speak out. So, you know, I mean, if something was happening in Roseboro, North Carolina, you and I both know, like, we're going to have to decide, are we going to speak out or are we going to ignore it? And those are the people that groomed us, that we grew up with. So I think you're going to see a lot of young athletes making that decision to support the communities that supported them. And so when you're constantly seeing young brown and black bodies being gunned down, shot in the back, shot after they're running, shot when they're sitting, shot when their hands are completely up, and you see these videos, it's emotionally disturbing and it's distressing. You've got to decide, are you going to continue to speak or live in your little bubble? And I think what you're seeing is more athletes are deciding to get out of that bubble.
Awesome. Great points, Professor Kuntz, and that's why I have you on the show. And that leading into just athletes standing for their communities, and we'll cross over to, I guess it's not really politics and sports, but it is in a certain extent, to where most people are saying now, if you're just tuning in, and most people are familiar with Cam Newton's story about how he disrespected the female reporter when she asked about a certain route. She asked questions about a certain route playing in the NFL, and Cam Newton goes, laughs and kind of says, that's funny, a woman asking about routes. And obviously that took social media by storm, and possibly me doing my own podcast, wanting to talk about sports as a female, and watching my idols, Jemele Hill and different ones. Obviously shout out to Kara Lawson, who is now the analyst for the Washington Wizards game.
Awesome.
She's awesome. So women are, you know, breaking barriers, making history, and doing great things in the media. So it's kind of like the male perception of women in the media hasn't changed much. But what most people were saying, and tie it back into politics and sports, is most people, you know, it's okay for Cam Newton to, or it should be okay, and he should be adamant and take a stand for women in sports. And you give a, people are saying that you should give more, they're giving more stock to what athletes say about the females and different things, different problems that go on with social media and the women in social and in the sports media world. But then you don't get on
right.
Trump for things that he says. And that's how it kind of ties back in. Like, we'll give our athletes and we'll get on our athletes for making, I guess, the wrong analogies or saying something to disrespect females in sports. But when they try to take a stand on something, as far as the social injustice is going on, it's like, oh, you can't do that, but you should have came correct when you were addressing the female reporter. And your thoughts on that, of just saying how there is a double standard where they hold these athletes to high standards with different situations, but as far as when they're protesting social injustice for what that happens within their own community, it's unheard of, and they're forced to almost about to be starting to maybe possibly not play if they continue the protest.
Right. I mean, and you said it best, it's just a double standard. I mean, now again, not to defend Cam Newton, and I think you've heard his apology, and I think his apology was sincere. I mean, it was an immature comment that he made, and whatever his intentions were with the comment, they came across as just pretty much immature. And I know if I would have been that woman reporter, I would have felt very uncomfortable. At the same time, though, look how quickly the outrage came against Cam Newton. But when it comes to, again, taking a knee, protesting these unarmed killings of our brothers and uncles and cousins, you get a different response. So I think it's just America. Unfortunately, this is the America we live in. We like our athletes to be a certain way. We want them to say a certain thing. And when they don't follow and tee that line that we want them to, there's going to be a lot of repercussions to that and a lot of people having opinions about that.
Well, speaking about Cam Newton and his immature comments, we do have your favorite team, your favorite coach, the San Antonio Spurs, and Coach Popovich, allowed Becky Hammond to coach the first half of a preseason.
Yes.
Real quick, we'll listen to her interview here and see what she had to say about her first opportunity to be a head coach during a preseason game of the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing opportunity for me, but Pop's, you know, we're a teaching program, and that comes directly from him, and so for him to give us this opportunity, and the guys hear a different voice, and, you know, that's what his tree is kind of all about. It's mentoring and bringing people along, so, you know, for me and Will Hardy and Coach Borrego and Ime, I mean, it's a nice opportunity to get out there and hold the clipboard and kind of be in the action. My feet hurt, though.
So, lightheartedly, that was a cute response, but definitely happy for Becky. But that just goes to show, like, how women are breaking down barriers and that there are a lot of men in sports who do support women, contrary to, you know, Cam Newton's immature comment. And what we did
right.
see, though, with Cam Newton's interview is we didn't watch the whole press conference. So that one sound bite really probably came off really harsh because that's all we saw. And, you know, it could have
right.
been a lighthearted interview. We don't know where he was going. And he probably did, even though it was an immature comment, he probably was. I don't think he did it intentionally. But like you said, your favorite coach, Coach Pop, is for women. He's for team play. And like she said, he's about mentoring and empowering others to do well at their job. And if we could just have more people like that in the professional sports world, it would be better for everyone involved.
Exactly. I agree totally. And Coach Popovich, he seems to set the bar high. He sets the standard. He's a risk taker, and it's proven to work well for him and his NBA team and just for that whole organization. And I hope other coaches will use him as a guide. I totally hope that will continue to be the standard that different professional teams set.
Well, Professor Kunta, it's been great having you on the show. We're doing well. This is episode 5, I believe it is, and we will look forward to each week discussing what's going on with athletes and sports and social justice and the political speed of how our society wants athletes to kind of stay in their place. But as you said and as you pointed out and made clear in this episode, that you don't believe that athletes can go back now, not the way the world is and the way social media has everyone informed, and 24/7 you get the news, the updates. Athletes will have to take a stand, and it's going to be interesting to figure out what the NFL decides to do about these NFL players that
right.
decide to keep protesting. So we look forward to talking about that in the future. Thanks again for coming on the show, and I look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Have a great day, Chaz.
You too. Thanks, Professor Kuntz.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's Chaz time. It's a baller thing, make it to the Hall of Fame. And if I don't, at least I tried. I was born with pride. Never won no handout, I stand out. Pace is needed in this game, I never ran out. All I ever wanted was a victory. Run a circle round competition like it was 60. I gave everything on the court. And when it's all over, let them say I was a true sport.
Welcome, everyone. This is True Sports Talk Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chastity Melvin. If you just tuning in, you missed the first segment with Professor Kuntz as we talked about athletes in sports that are protesting, and who says politics and sports don't match? Obviously, the athletes are doing a great job of it now, and the NFL has some issues with it. Finishing up that segment, we will now take you into the next part of the show, and that is Sue Favors, and we're welcoming her on the show as we discuss the WNBA championship and her coverage of women's basketball. Get her story. So listen in and enjoy the show. Thanks for tuning in. This is True Sports Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Chastity Melvin.
I tried, I was born with pride. Never won no handout, I stand out. Pace is needed in this game, I never ran out. All I ever wanted was a victory.
victory. Running circles around competition like it was 6 to me. I gave everything on the court. Yeah. And when it's all over, let them say I was the truth.
Welcome, everyone. This is True Sports Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Chastity Melvin. Thanks for joining me. You could have been anywhere in the world tonight, but you choose to listen to me, and I appreciate that. Today, I'm so excited to have on here one of my faves, Sue Favors. She's an avid athlete and sports fan out in L.A., so we got her on East Coast time right now a little bit. She became a basketball aficionado 36 years ago when her dad started taking her to college games. She has worked as a full-time journalist outside of college and began writing about women's basketball in 2008. Her blog was followed by so many, and people just really tuned into her blog that she created her own website in 2015. And she's covered the sport year-round, women's basketball, all the info you need to know about the players, great stories. I follow her. I retweet her all the time to make it, you know, makes me seem like I'm keeping up. So thank you, Sue. You really helped me out on my Twitter feed. And I appreciate that. I'm like, oh, I know Sue knows what's going on. I'll just go to her Twitter real quick and retweet it. So I appreciate that. So welcome to the show, Sue, and thanks for coming on.
Well, hey, good evening. You're too kind. I appreciate that. Nice to be on the show.
Well, let's get started. I just want to share with people, get your story, and or would you want to talk? Let's first talk, chalk it up about what just transpired in the WNBA. For those of you tuning in, WNBA, fantastic, over 20 seasons. Finally, Lisa Borders has stepped her game up as a president. A lot of things, great things happening in the league. We're on NBA 2K8, and I say we. I mean, as a I play with the league for years. I'm not on NBA 2K Live 2018, but I'm pushing for the veterans to get on there. So we'll see if they bring the old school players back. The Minnesota Lynx, for the fourth time in 7 seasons, have become WNBA champions under the head coach, brilliant coaching of Cheryl Reeve. They tied the Houston Comets, one of my favorite, all-time favorite players of WNBA, Cynthia Cooper's, kind of a tie. I have Cynthia Cooper. I just love her because that's when I came to the league and the Raising the Roof. I mean, just the way she branded the league, I think she was just so instrumental, her and Cheryl Swoops. But obviously I'm a tie with Diana now. For this generation, Diana's been my favorite player. So, Sue, tell us a little bit. You were out in L.A. You were watching the games. I had picked L.A., you know, when they won that first game. I just felt like L.A. had the better team athletically. I didn't know if Lindsey Whalen would get her rhythm back in time. So tell me a little bit about what you thought about the WNBA 2017 playoffs.
Man, it's hard to even know where to start, Chessy. It just seemed like turned into be what I thought was a psychological exercise more so than anything, because I've had picked LA too, and that was way before the playoffs, because they were just looking so strong. They were a better team than last year's championship winning team. They were stronger, deeper, better, faster. They were more consistent after the All-Star break. They were on fire after the All-Star break. They only lost 2 games after July 22nd going into the playoffs. And that was, they went into the playoffs on, I believe, a 10-game winning streak. It was ridiculous. So I picked them. And what we saw was, you know, they started out strong, and they were strong game 3, and then they just kind of fell apart in game 4, and they carried that falling apart momentum into the into the final game, and it was just a total collapse. So it was definitely a surprise to me, probably a surprise to a lot of other people who had picked them, because Minnesota had struggled after the break, All-Star break, and the Sparks were quite the opposite. So the playoffs didn't turn out like some of us had thought.
Well, I mean, when you look at it, like you said, they just fell apart in game 4. And from a competitor, and you talk about it all the time, and athletes hate hearing this, and it's painful to hear, but basically it's kind of like one of the choke jobs that will probably go down in history for the WNBA and the Sparks. They pretty much choked in game 4, and you can go to the timeouts and hear Coach Agler saying, we're playing with too much pressure. Their shots were unbelievably short. They were shooting bricks. And they just didn't respond to that pressure of closing it out in game 4. And unfortunately, that, you know, it happens. Athletes go through it in games and tournaments. A team has been, you know, strongly favored to win and just squandered. And that's basically what you can pretty much, at the end of the day, I have friends, players on LA's team, but that's what you got to squander. When you squander a lead and playing great basketball going into a game for to possibly win a championship, you can't really call it anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a good clarification to make. Now, by being honest about what really went down, you know, in no way am I faulting anyone. I think overall we're a very sensitive society now, but just in the spirit of old-fashioned discussion, you know, nobody's blaming anybody for anything, but man, it was kind of a shock because they started out game four all right. Then all of a sudden the energy just went south, and it was kind of like what happened in game four last year. They started out strong, and then all of a sudden the momentum shifted. But whereas in game five last year they got that back, that never happened. And I'm going to share with the listeners a conversation you and I had the other day. And it was interesting. I thought about it. We were talking about who had the pressure on them going into game five. And I really thought about your opinion. I agreed with you for a minute, Chastity, and then I went back to my original opinion. You said the pressure was on Minnesota going into game five because they had to defend their title at home. But I still feel like the pressure was on Los Angeles to go back and repeat the impossible feat 2 years in a row. And sure enough, they didn't do it. And I just think that's psychologically a tall order when you've kind of pulled off what many consider to be the impossible, and then you have to go back and do the exact same thing when you're the, you know, supposed underdog, even though you're the champion. I just think that might have messed with their heads. And then on another tack, several fans and experts I've talked to kind of felt the officiating played a part in it. Whenever you say stuff like that, though, it does sound like sour grapes, so I don't really have an opinion on that, but some people felt like the referees stopped the momentum at times, and so that might have played a part in it too, you know. But then again, if you're a player, you can't let the referees or anybody else get in your head, so I would submit that, I guess.
Well, the refs are human. I mean, I'm a player. I always look at the refs. I've always been taught by Coach Al, the refs, you know, you can't say the refereeing. I think the refs
exactly.
Missed a lot of calls. I think it went both ways. At the end of the day, there were some horrible calls called on Minnesota. There were horrible calls called on LA. There were a lot of non-calls that I felt like should have been called. But for the most part, the end of the day is what I always say is the ref does not put the ball in the basket and the ref doesn't rebound. They have absolutely nothing to do with that. And rebounding wise,
they're definitely playing badly. Yeah.
Rebounding wise, Rebecca Brunson did happen to LA Sparks. They had no answer for her on the boards. They had no answer for Sylvia Fowles on the boards. And as much as Coach Agler would want to say, you got to put a body on them. I don't know if refereeing had a job, but Seal was camped out in that paint. And I'm going to just tell you, as a former player going against her and practicing games every day, once she has 2 feet in the paint, I mean, you can't – there's only so much boxing out you can do for her and Rebecca. So
that was definitely the most notable statistic out of both of those last two games. I believe the rebounding margin was 48-28 Minnesota in for game four, and it was something real similar in game five. So definitely the Sparks did not get it done on the boards, that's for sure. It was just – it felt like the energy in game four – I was not able to attend game five, but the energy in game four, it just felt very flat. And talking with the players later in the locker room, the players in the locker room were kind of flat too at that point. But anyway, it is what it is, I guess.
It is what it is, and at the end of the day, it's about – like they always say, the coaches always say offensive wins games, defensive wins possessions, and rebounds win championships. So Minnesota got the rebounding edge. They have the MVP. They have the MVP, Sylvia Fowles, MVP of the finals. Congrats to her on a great season. And the X factor, of course, we spoke about this too, talking about the game earlier that week, is Lindsay Whalen showed up. The leader for the Minnesota Lynx finally got in the rhythm, and with her toughness just led them, you know, just overall with her leadership in that game five.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was really nice to see that, you know, Syl just came up big. You know, she's been known to do that now. She's doing it more consistently. Seems like she's really got her mojo, got her confidence. And she's such a nice person, too, off the court. It's always good to see good things happen to good people, and she was just very deserving to get a double honor like that of regular season MVP and finals MVP. That's pretty special. I think she's only the fourth player in the league to do that in the league's history, so that is pretty special. So it's nice to see her get her just due in doing that for the team like that.
And speaking about the WNBA and everything that's happened, what are your thoughts on what Lisa Bortis has brought to the league as president of the WNBA?
Well, she's extremely business-minded, and that's an asset to the league. They really need somebody looking out for the bottom line and for the X's and O's. She is very attentive to, you know, the business interests of the league and very attentive to the players in the league. And, you know, it seems like it's hard to quantify at this point. She's only been there for 2 years, but it does seem like, you know, viewership is up on television, and the league has definitely made more efforts to get people involved as far as interviews. You know, they have pre-game conference calls with players now as of last summer that they didn't have for media to get stories going and whatnot. So things are definitely improving. We still have a long way to go, but it does seem like things are improving a little bit on some fronts.
Yes, I totally agree, and we'll see moving forward what she does with that. I have a short. I know I've heard her speak a bunch, you know, since she's gotten that role and transferred over from Coca-Cola and just switched gears. But just listen in as she speaks about women right here.
Okay.
From Lisa Bortis every time she could you hear that interview?
Yes, so, I was able to hear some of it. Yes, she's
and,
making a definite business analogy there.
Yeah, to say that the WNBA players globally are all over the world, and yes, Twitter helps with that. But in every speech, Lisa Bortis says, "Can I get an amen?" What are your thoughts on that? Do you like that?
No, I mean, you go ahead.
No, you tell me. I mean, I grew up in church, so it just kind of throws me off because I'm like, can I get an amen? But I wonder, you know, sometimes when I'm watching people in the stands or just, I love to see the reaction when people hear that. So I would love to hear your reaction on that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, she's really a savvy business lady. Like, she probably wouldn't want to use that in every part of the country she goes to, but I haven't really heard her say that before.
I do
if she's
think
going
it's
to where
cute,
I, if she's going to where I'm from, Seattle or to LA, she might want to say, throw those deuces in the air or something like that. I don't know. I'm just playing though, but she might want to say something else. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess you could tailor it to each place different, each place that she was visiting and speaking in. Well, Sue, let's, now that we chalked that up and talked a little bit about Lisa, talked about the Minnesota, again, congrats to the Minnesota Lynx and on their championship. And they're just the powerhouse. They're the dynasty. They've created this dynasty there. And I'm sure you remember as well as I remember playing there just to see the crowd at the games. I remember going to Minnesota. They had no fans. There was no one in the arena at the games when we went out to Minnesota, and now to see like sellout crowds, that just goes to show what the WNBA can have in each franchise, and definitely what you can have when you start winning.
Yeah, definitely, you know, build it and they will come. When I was living in Seattle when the Seattle storm formed and came, and yes, indeed, the first two seasons, 2000, 2001, when they were trying to build a good team, you know, Key Arena was pretty empty. We were always joking that you could, like, yell across to people sitting on the other side of the arena and they could probably hear what you were saying. And then to see them, you know, 3 years later build up to packed houses all the time and then to win their first WNBA championship. So I definitely understand the transformation that you're talking about. And it's fun. It's really fun to see that happening. And Minnesota has a good crowd. Connecticut has a good crowd. And let me think who else. Indianapolis used to have a good crowd, but they kind of have had a tough rebuilding year there. But I'm optimistic they'll get it back. Very good cities for WNBA games seem to be those mid-sized cities like that. So Midwest, man, they love their sports, you know.
Yeah, they do. And they love basketball.
Yeah. Oh,
man,
yeah.
So let's get back to you and get back to your story, your great coverage of the W, great coverage of women's basketball. Why did you get into this? Why did you get into writing about women's basketball? Why do you feel you're so passionate about it?
Boy, I won't go on and on, Chastity, but basically when my dad started taking me to college games when I was in middle school, and just seeing all those women at the time, it was the early 80s, and there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, female sports role models out there for young girls, and I really needed some, and that literally inspired me to just become an athlete myself, and I guess that was basketball was my first love, even though I personally wasn't that good at it myself. I've never stopped studying it, never stopped watching it, and, you know, I just have a love for the game that is deep and wide, and so, yeah, I guess, I honestly just finally got to a point, I guess, in 2008 where I was just like, you know what, I'm going to start writing about this because there's not a whole lot out there that's being written about, so let me just jump in, and then, you know, hey, it was kind of more of a success initially than I thought it was going to be. I guess I had no expectations. But within a few months of just starting a basketball blog, I got an offer to start writing for a website, and that led to another offer writing for another website, and had some freelance stories published here and there, like on SportsIllustrated.com and Slam and a couple other places. And, yeah, so by 2015, I was just kind of ready to strike out on my own. And I really love covering the game year-round. I just love every part of the game. I love college ball. It was obviously my first love, and I love WNBA. Love some high school games. I've coached high school ball, and that's really fun. The passion at that level is just there's nothing like high school play passion. So I love a little bit of every part of the game, and I just try to give it as much light as possible because, you know, women's basketball still needs some. Lots of light, lots of stories still left to be told.
And there are tons of stories to be told, and that's why I wanted to start my podcast back up and get as many interviews with just not only women athletes but male athletes and just get that story out there because athletes have a unique story and those who cover it have a unique story because there's just so many things you can learn from athletics and sports. And like you said, in high school, passionate. I coached high school for 2 years. It's so rewarding, you know, for those young ladies when you coach them in high school and see how they improve and see how they come together as a team and how their confidence, especially for young teenage girls, you know, just seeing their confidence grow is also rewarding. Covering the WNBA has been 20 years. What do you think? What are some positives from it, and what do you think the W can improve upon?
Well, you know, obviously the WNBA over the last 20 years has just grown in its skill level exponentially. Players overall have just become so much more multi-skilled, so much more athletic. It's just amazing to see the transformation. I'm not in any way by saying that basketball was bad before, but it's just so much more diverse now. You know, you have all players at all positions able to do a variety of things that you didn't used to see. And, I mean, the prime example, obviously, that was just we just saw in the playoffs was Candace Parker having some of the most beautiful assists in the league at 6'4", seventh in the WNBA in assists at the end of the regular season. What other big does that? And then you also have, you know, your guards who are not afraid to penetrate to the basket and go up against the trees, and it's just a lot of stuff going on. And so that skill level, that conditioning has really, really made the game even more fun and exciting to watch. I think the main stumbling block for the league just continues to be getting out the word. Seems like everybody's really worried about acceptance, but with all due respect, I don't see that's as big of an issue as just getting more exposure, which would be year-round. I know there's a conflict when, you know, many players have to go overseas to play in the wintertime, but there's some that can stay home and do publicity events or promote the league. Just creating awareness, getting high schools involved, bringing high schools to the games in the summertime, going to high schools in the wintertime during games and stirring up some interest there. Those are just a couple of things. Getting the college-level players involved. There's just so many things they could do, and that's an idea I have proposed. And then I've also proposed, I really think each team should go to a dedicated base of fans in each city and talk to them. Talk to the fans in each city, those people that live there and know their teams best. Ask them what they should do to better market to their own city. Some of the fans I've talked to here in Los Angeles have amazing ideas. I'm like, man, I've never seen a WNBA team do that, what you just said. So, boy, I wish they would. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Those are just a few of the ideas I've had. I have had a bunch over the last few years. But just continued publicity, I think, is the main obstacle for the WNBA right now, because basically now that the lights are off, it's going to go invisible for a lot of people until next April.
That's a great point that you make, Sue. Obviously, with the players going overseas and that downtime during the year, I know I've played, I know I've spoken to the fans, and they're just like, I mean, now before with social media, some fans can stay in touch with those players overseas, but still in the States, it's kind of like the league becomes invisible during the winter season and fans forget about it. Sponsors don't really feel like, why promote it? Like you said, I think you made valid points. The WNBA could use some players. And I think they did that a lot when the league first started. During that downtime, they had players, key players that would go out in the community and do different things just to make sure to keep that brand awareness going. So I think those are very valid points that you spoke to, and I think the WNBA obviously will try to find a way to do that within the new future, because they have to create that brand awareness. Now, speaking of, you created your website, you got into this basketball, and you're a big fan, but you've learned so much. What is your vision now with the website up and with your following? What are you working on now? Because, as you know, we always have to be working on something else. That's the way of today's world out here. You know, you have a job, you create something, and you got to just keep going. You can never be satisfied. So what's your vision moving forward? I know you are inspired to talk about a network that you have a vision for.
Yes. Well, funny that you managed to bring this up, Chastity, because I'm actually, right before we began this call, I've been kind of dealing with, I got a video program, so now I got to figure out how to get video onto the video program, because that's womenshoopsworld.com's next venture is video, so we can bring the visual part of this onto to life, rather. And then, yes, we are going to have a separate YouTube channel for women's knowledge and women's education, women's empowerment, and I'm really excited about that. So I'm trying to get this video program stuff down, Chassie, so if any listeners want to call in, no, I'm just like, we're going to get it, though, because as you mentioned, shoot, my 80-year-old mentor even told me that we always got to stay, changing, always got to stay ready to change, ready to grow, because things just happen so fast these days, so.
And
we're going visual.
Yeah, you have to be visual. As work with social media, did social media some for the KR Cancer Fund where I worked, and people are in the videos. They want to see. That's the trend now. They want to see. They don't want to read. They want to see and they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So, for our listeners listening in, Sue, I've enjoyed having you on the show. Before I let you out, that you made a plea to the listeners and those following that get a chance to hear this podcast. Tell them where they can find you, and you might be able to find some interns, because there's some great interns out there, I'll tell you that much, that can help you with all the video things and give you quick ideas and give you I call them my young mentors that I call on. Hey, what's going on? Can you help me out here? So tell your young mentors out there that may be listening, or even the followers, where they can find you, where they can follow you on social media, and we'll close the show with that.
Well, that's kind of you to throw that out there. I am actually soliciting a young core of writers from around the country, because I'm always looking for new talent. If you would like to contact me about writing or doing video for womenshoopsworld.com and get your name out there a little bit too. That would be wonderful. Be a win-win situation for all concerned, because we're just trying to bring the stories to the game, about the game, to life, and about the people in the game, because they sure deserve it. Website is womenshoopsworld.com, and then all the contact information is up there under the on the tab on the at the upper right of the page. And then our Twitter is twitter.com/hoopism, H-O-O-P-I-S-M. And do feel free to contact and reach out. I've had a few wonderful story ideas submitted to me by a few college sports information directors so far. So one that I had loved the thought, it's going to be a great feature. So we got a lot of interesting and fun stories coming for the 2017-2018 college basketball season that I am so excited to bring you. And if you would have any other ideas, or you'd like to maybe even write for us or assist with video, we'd sure love to hear from you.
Thank you, Sue. And I'll be waiting. I'm a fan. I'm ready for those interesting stories, and I follow what you do. I'm appreciative of all your coverage of the sport, the W sport, and just shedding a positive light on it. And I hope to have you back on the show once that NCAA season starts up, and we can chalk it up then. So thanks for coming on the show tonight, Sue, and we'll be in touch.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's really been fun, Chessie.